Next submitter on my list is Aaron Wilson. Just pause for a minute, I just want to check something, so if you've got any original solution, here's this. Just a sec, it's right. The original submission, is it just this one page?
No, it's multiple, it's a whole.
Beat me.
No, that's right.
Yeah, so.
Yep, no, carry on.
Adding out that basically I'm going to speak to those notes that are given to you, so if you need to refer back to them.
Yep, thank you.
No problem. Can I start?
So, yes, absolutely.
So thank you very much for the opportunity to present to you all today. I'd like to start out by touching a little on my background and giving you an opportunity to get a small insight into my family's farming background. Then I'd like to outline some of my concerns regarding the proposed water and land plan, and hopefully I can convey to you a few proposed solutions that I have. In the essence of timeliness and with a view to answering some questions that you may have for me, I'll acknowledge that you've already read my submission and I'll have understood my comments and recommended changes. My family and I have already farmed in the Balfour District of Northern Southland all my life, and we have always cherished the land and the lifestyle that Southland offers. The land that comprises our farm rises from the banks of the Waimea Stream up to the skyline of the Hokanui Hills on the Glen Ewer Hill. We currently operate a self-contained dairy farm, milking 800 cows, and also run a small herd of beef and finished bulls for the meatworks. In the past, before conversion, we farmed sheep, beef, deer, and some crop in the mix as well. It feels as though I have been involved in the proposed water and land plan since its inception almost 5 years ago, as I started to gather some local farmers in the district to form one of the first catchment groups. Since that time, I've attended, ran, and held various meetings and field days, trying to raise awareness and transfer knowledge amongst the community regarding the improvement of water quality. I'm passionate about the environment and the community. I also feel that farmer-led engagement offers the best outcomes when talking about issues of intergenerational change. It is my belief that the proposed water and land plan oversteps the stated goal of holding the line and moves into the limit setting process by virtue of the system changes that will impose on farmers. The heavy focus on dairy farming signals to the wider population that if dairy is regulated, all will be well. My belief is that this serves to absolve other sectors, both rural and urban, from their responsibilities around water trends. Ultimately, this will make the limit setting process more difficult for all parties. I hope that this can be addressed through the submission process. It is critical that this plan not only sets a framework with which the limit setting process can take place, but also it signals the intent of Council in regards to the engagement and delivery of future plan changes and the processes under the NPFW, or the National Policy for Fresh Water. The Council has already been sent a clear message at the ballot box last election to reconsider its approach around areas such as physiographic zones, winter grazing areas and cultivation rules. I am not for 1 minute denying that water quality outcomes don't need to improve, but I am asking for the Council to lead the community through closer community engagement, not through a rule-based consenting regime, which ultimately offers limited positive environmental outcomes at great expense both to ratepayers and ES reputational capital. I understand that the water land plan has to operate within the RMA, and therefore I see the need for consents and rules to give effect to that. But the opportunity presents itself to enable genuine culture shift towards sustainable farming practices if this council chooses to be bold and help empower individuals. This will ensure that water outcomes desired by the community and mandated by central government will be less planner driven and more effects-based, thus avoiding the temptation for a tick box approach which will ultimately doom the process to failure and regulatory overkill. After reading the council officer's report, section 42, I am more convinced of this than ever. Just for clarification, I've just shortened the words, the proposed water length there, so I'll call it the plan if I refer to it.
Yeah, that's fine.
Cool. So the plan uses physiographic zones as the cornerstone of most of the new consents and rules that would be required to farm now or into the future. The science is not contentious, but the application of what is described by ES itself as a measure of a risk for contaminant flow is, in my view, flawed. The application of this measure in such a way as to radically alter the business model of some families based on risk assessment is wrong. This is magnified when you look at the modelling being done on a scale that makes it very difficult for individual farms to know with certainty what zone they are in. At the moment, there is no method for redress or establishing alterations to zone boundaries. I feel that to base a large number of rules and consent applications on the physiographic zone data at this stage is to cause undue hardship for many families. The targeting of individual physiographic zones with different levels of compliance needs to be rethought, as this only serves to create winners and losers with no redress and drive system change before the limit setting process. I believe that if the physiographic zones are to be included in the plan, that a level of fairness needs to apply amongst them all. The signal has now been sent that change may be a certainty for some zones leading into this limit setting process. I challenge you guys to put yourselves in the situation of a farming family that wakes up morning to find they are placed in the old Matara zone. The pressure and the stress is real. I found the fundamental lack of understanding in the proposed plan around how dynamic farm systems are and how no two farms are the same astounding. This is evidenced by the plan's encroachments onto many areas that should and can only be described as farm management related. The list is extensive and reaches from when I can apply effluent to who and how I should conduct a drop test on my lined effluent pond. Let's not forget that now I can't cultivate some of my hill country or feed my cows on winter crop over a certain hectareage or construct more than one carbon pad. Many of the limited tools available to me to mitigate poor environmental outcomes have been reduced or in cases made unworkable by some of the rules and their unintended consequences. Some of the most benign rules can limit the innovation required for meeting water quality challenges on farm. An example in section 42 is the proposal, that's 7.642, that back fencing on crops should become a rule. No, it shouldn't. Because in some winter grazing scenarios, you don't want to back fence. For example, a fodder crop grass feeding system. The complexity of the plan simply astounds me. What was once a simple, universally understood rule for a setback margin of 3 metres couldn't be left alone. Even it has not been spared the planner's pen and has had to be tinkered with. Most of the rules, when applied, ensure system change, and change that will not be recognised before or during the limit setting process. Confusion reigns supreme, and with that comes uncertainty, and that breeds fear. The fear is real because we are dealing with families and farms that in many cases have made long-term capital investments that are not easily reversed. It is imperative that ES show some leadership around the complexity and uncertainty created by this waterland plan. Therefore, it is my belief that the proposed plan needs to lean heavily in favour of GMP. This will ensure engagement and intergenerational change. A heavy reliance on GMP will enable farmers to innovate and transfer technology and techniques far easier and more efficiently than if forced to comply with a prescriptive set of rules. It is my proposal that the Commissioners direct the Council towards a two-track application of the operation of the proposed water and land plan. Track 1 being the plan is notified. Track 2, an optional GMP-based system that farmers opt into. All farming entities start on the consent and rules-based plan and can only choose to opt out if they complete voluntary obligations such as supplying a farm environmental plan. This will only work in a genuine manner if there remains a positive tension. This positive tension is the notification of the plan as it sits now in all regards, apart from the rules around farming. The consenting process for land use change and rules around the physiographic zones should still remain. As should most of the water extraction rules, the discharge rules around dairy effluent need not change either. When it comes to winter grazing, cultivation, Appendix N and instances of on-farm operational decisions, then an opt-out clause should be invoked. The only way to opt out of the consenting rules based plan is to supply stock reconciliation 1st of May every year with a breakdown of classes of stock wintered. This data is supplied much like dairy farmers now supply water tanks. The data collected can then aid ES in tracking actual wintering trends. This data will negate the need for any imposition of rules regarding winter fodder crop areas until such time as catchment limit setting takes place. The limit setting process will be greatly enhanced if livestock wintering numbers can be accurately gathered. The amount of crop or area grazed is irrelevant in the limit setting phase from a nutrient point of view, as overall catchment loads are the key driver, not concentration. The other aspects of winter grazing, such as cultivation and slope, can fall into the GMP that needs to be completed along with the stock reconciliation. The idea is that a three-strike rule would ensure that monitoring transgressions of the plan are dealt with, but people who falsify or attempt to game the system get placed into the consenting rule-based side of the plan from which there is no escape. Thus, targeting the poorest operators, whilst not creating a wall of consents and increasing compliance costs for all. The GMP channel can be audited or held accountable by EES, and the likelihood is that some farming operations may end up being moved into the consenting channel at some stage, depending on the requirements of the FMUs at limit setting. The current plan's heavy reliance on complex rules and consenting can still be used as intended as a strong vehicle with which to apply and discharge the RMA, therefore negating outside pressures and fulfilling the statutory duty of the council. This would be a bold and proactive move, one that I feel would negate a lot of tension and set the tone. It would also mean that all consideration to the process of submitting on the plan would apply, and that the desired effects of holding the line before the limit setting could be achieved. To summarise, the current plan that has been notified contains a large number of confusing rules. It goes beyond the holding the line, and in many cases, gives effect to farm system change. A move into limit setting by default. It offers no form of redress or clarification to some major changes on the way policies are interpreted regarding physiographic zones, and offers no acknowledgement of any system change before or during the limit setting process has begun. The rules that relate to farming, such as cultivation, slope, winter grazing areas, drainage, and even large parts of the Appendix N are prescriptive, confusing, and in some cases unworkable. Therefore, the move to include GMP and encourage farms to solve some of the environmental issues caused by farming should be recognised as the best way to create long-term intergenerational change. The implementation of this plan and how GMPs can assist creating a workable, cohesive, effective document must be recognised. I repeat, this is not at the expense of the duties that must be discharged around the RMA. The tools lie at your disposal of this document to achieve that. As I've previously stated, Council needs to be bold in their decision-making, and we strongly urge that you recommend the two-track system of implementation that I've outlined to be adopted. Thank you for your time today. I'm happy to field any questions you may have.
Thank you very much for that. Morris, we'll start at your end.
Thank you, Aaron. You've got lots of good suggestions there for us to work through, although I think the plan is designed pretty much the way you're suggesting, in that, you know, if you don't do certain things, and you can do the activity as a permitted activity, so you don't need a resource consent. And even if you need a resource consent, that doesn't mean you can't do it. You have to, you're aware of all that. So if you have to get these good management practices talk about, I assume you mean a farm environment management plan or a beef and land plan something equivalent.
I guess my only comment would be that after reading through some of the comment on section 42, I could have sat here all day and argued the point on many, and simply I know myself there's a photo of, you know, of some back fencing which I'm doing currently. There's lots of, and I think that a farmer is, and I think you'll find that technology uptake, all those things will be far more proactive and far more easily, like, I think you guys should recognise the business of regulation and keeping, setting the tone and the limits, and then letting people going away and sort of sorting it out for themselves. And I think that we'll find a robust system, and you engage the community, especially going into that next process.
I think the tricky part is getting the compliance, if you like, maybe not the right word, with the farm environment plan, or the auditing of it, and so that it's, you know, make sure that people are doing the right thing without it being too onerous. That seems to be a bit of a tricky area.
Yeah, I think the tension that you need to build, in my opinion, is that you have two options. I know as a dairy farmer, I hold consents, and I know the perverse attitudes that sometimes they present, and I can see that replicated through the sheep and beef guys who have never seen a compliance officer on their farm. So I think there's a really good tension already there, and basically the big stick is you opt out of being in the consenting process, but it's a privilege. When you're in there, you get one or two minor chances, but once you're back in, you're there for good. So I think there's a really, there's a good opportunity because it's already, as you say, it's already existing. You've already had the framework's there now. It's not a matter of changing or redoing any of what you've organised. It's more thinking at it from a different angle and maybe applying a little bit more thought to how you'd like to see the process go down further down with the farm environment plans and the more voluntary, I say that voluntary because it's just the best word to use, rather the consenting regime, which people might want to stay in. Who knows? Give their business some certainty. Who knows? You know?
No, I think I understand the comment.
Yeah.
The concept, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good afternoon. Thank you for your quite substantial submission and evidence. In your submission, you were referring to feedlots, the issue of limiting feedlots to one per property. On your particular farm, you have one or more?
Well, actually, on my particular farm, we don't have any, but I've done some research on attenuation of nitrogen as we were talking about winter grazing, it's our main issue. And I managed to get ag research involved, and we ran some trials where we can reduce the nitrogen footprint by about 10-12% just by using some basic, going on Farm Southland's 99 kL feedlots. And so I guess I'm fearful that unintended consequences of some of the rules coming in are that we're going to negate, well, we can't even explore that opportunity or you know, so what I'm trying to say is the market will dictate or whereas you guys should be setting the boundaries and maybe cracking down on who you need to, but let people work it out for themselves because it's very quick moving what's happening at the moment as far as regards environmental responses.
I was interested in your submission point that in building your wintering shed, you know, to make it profitable you require more to have more cows.
Yeah, it's not only that. If you think about it as far as the National Policy Statement for Fresh Waters and FMUs, so say for example we've got one big FMU, we'll call them a tower or whatever, it's easy for me to work on. We have many, you know, diverse ranges of farming operations on there, and we all know the key driver to degradation of water quality is intensification. So land use intensification can come not just in fertiliser, but it comes as inputs as well, as you'll know. So you build a structure, it drives you to have to pay for that structure. So you pay for that structure, and you might be able to resolve some issues, but you've got to buy something off someone else. And more often than not, you buy off your neighbour. You will see the grain farmer down the road, he'll up his tonnages of grain. So you actually get a net lift, even though it's a perverse outcome in my opinion, but not always widely known either. And so thank you for acknowledging that.
Thank you.
Yeah, Aaron, thank you for some very good practical stuff in your submission and the effort you put into it. I've got one area, like a wee bit of clarification on, which was in your not your original one, on page 2, third paragraph, you're talking about the different, you'll get what I'm talking about, different physiographic zones, and you're saying it's a winners and losers system.
Yep.
You use the example of Oldham Tower, and we've had other submitters talk on it. So my question is this, are you casting some aspersions upon the science of how the physiographic zones perform, or are you saying for a matter of equity we need to ignore outcomes?
I'm absolutely support the science behind it. I think it's robust. I mean, it's been peer reviewed and so on. Now, I don't think there's any dispute. We can always argue about the application of any science. So I would say that in the application that we've used, sure, it's a perfect risk assessment model. Really good for flagging, everybody's the soil types and what the potential risks for contaminants. I think that's a valid point, and everyone should be made aware of it. Just how we, at this phase of where we are right now, I think it's probably really hard because some of those, to actually even the playing field as far as like saying, well, Almatera is going to leak X amount of N, we've got no GMP to fix that, so we need to restrict stuff there. That to me sits in the limit setting phase. That to me is, because you're asking someone to do a limit, simply a system change, whereas the rest of the farmers, we can cope, but if you're fundamentally changing a farming operation because of the land that they sit on, then they didn't realise last year that it was a Alma Terra. I think that's just a step too far for the application of the science. But I'm not disputing science. I think
So if I'm trying to summarise what you've said now, make sure I've got it right,
So you're saying, yeah, the science is the basis, but as commissioners, have some consideration for equity of the individuals when you're working solutions.
Absolutely.
Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm asking for. Thank you.
Lloyd?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Aaron, you've made quite a detailed submission and you've made a lot of comments, but you know that there's one or two key rules or policies in there that everything flows from. Where do you think that we should, as it were, concentrate to get the framework right and then all those other rules actually fit into that?
I think if you set us, I mean, in my opinion, you can sit most of the existing consenting regime out of one side and not worry about it, because I think, to be honest, it's fairly robust. I don't think there's too much of an issue. My only concerns are the use of the physiographic zones without any reference to the limit setting process, because I think, you know, they should definitely be in the plan somewhere, because it's what you're going to have to base your limit setting off. But we're talking about farming activities that fall out of that, and I kind of think that's where your perversities come in. That's where that should be more of a FMU focused response to. It's a measure of risk, but we actually need to respond to the actuals as well that's going on, and you'll get a perverse outcome. So I guess my answer to you in a long-winded way would be, I think the key things to focus on are your GMP in this plan. It's absolutely fundamental to what needs to happen in the future. And I firmly believe that you could probably notify this plan as is if you had the intention to implement it with us within a different spirit, so that the poorest people are picked up by the people that are of concern will be picked up by the rules that are there. The people that are doing a good job or were finding perverse outcomes, they can resolve it as they go along. So you've still got the backstop of, okay, we'll pull you over into the consenting regime. It's already there. And that's where I see it needs to lie. It needs to fall somewhere in there.
So we follow that line of thinking. The suggestion is it's how you work out where people sit.
Yeah, well, I think if I can wind it back a little bit to sort of unwind the rule, I think, about winter grazing, and I think that's pretty contentious. Let's face it, there's no easy way to skin it, because you either go in percentages or hectares, and no one's happy, either or. So isn't it actually about, don't we actually want to find out how many animals were wintering in South, and don't we actually want to actually keep tabs on what's actually going on the ground and keep an eye on the trends? So therefore, a perfect example of that voluntary code, you can opt not to if you're too worried about giving up your stock reconciliation, but you can opt in by submitting some stock reco numbers, crunch the numbers, you're going to get a build of a database pretty quickly, it'd be pretty robust, and then we can overlay that onto your physiographic zones. We can actually see, we don't need to change any rules to get that, but we can actually start making some really good, evidential sort of based work that we can turn up and say, well, guys in the Matera zone, we are way over allocated here, or we maybe, if the water results come in, you've got something to work on. And it diffuses a lot of the potential, dispute or negativity at the outset. And I think that's the fundamental side of what I call it, the FM, or the more non-regulated, it's not non-regulated, but it's the more voluntary part of the plan. It's like there's a tension, there's always a good tension there. If you don't do that, well, then you're going to have to stay within the plan as it is. And I think you'll have a bit of a stick and carrot mentality going on at the same time, and you won't have the animosity or as much animosity, and you'll be able to present people with numbers that they can understand. In 12 months' time, when the limit setting process takes place or whatever, you can actually start presenting people with, well, this is the actual trends, not just in water, but in wintering, because if wintering is their problem, let's look at wintering and let's target it.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. You made a very detailed initial submission, which is very clear, so thank you for that.
Thank you.
So in terms of that initial submission, given its level of detail and the time you put into compiling it, are you happy to just hand annotate that original submission and indicate on that where you're happy with the Section 42A recommendations and where you're not?
Yep.
So then when we come back to look at it, when we deliberate, we can think, sure. Okay, well, these issues seem to be addressed by the officers, but these ones are still live. It would be helpful
cool.
for us. I
must say that I have to be very broad for the interest of time in this. But
yeah, there's no criticism.
Not,
if you're happy, just hand annotate it, say, happy with 42A, not happy with 42A, just something as brief as that would be fine, breach of your submission points. Come into the material you've tabled today. I'm looking at page 2, and I'd like you to look at the bottom paragraph. So it's the paragraph that starts, I have found a fundamental lack. Do you see that?
Yep.
And then you see the fifth line, you say, let's not forget that I can't now I can't cultivate some of my hill country, etc.
Yep.
And I was just wondering if you'd left some words off the end of that sentence, and the words would be, as a committed activity.
Well, yeah.
Because you know that these things aren't prohibited, just over certain thresholds you might need a consent.
Yeah, but that's where my point of view is, the complexity and the lack of understanding. Like, if we're trying to address issues that are quite fundamental, and yet we've got sideshows going on because people don't, at 3 years' time, you create, I believe you actually turn people off the whole process. They're not simple enough. A 3 metre rule was pretty much complied with in the first 12 or 13, 14 months of it coming in. And now we've sort of muddied the waters, and I think this is where it comes back to the prescriptive nature of the farming rules. They're very ambiguous in places. They lead confusion. And I just think, you know, it can be completely streamlined by taking them and setting them out over on this side, letting the farmers work it out with...
I understand all of that, but my question was quite specific.
Yep.
Do you acknowledge that those things can still occur by way of resource consent over the PA?
By way of resource consent is what I would add,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's not, I can't do it now without resource consent, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, okay.
Yeah. Which I think is wrong.
Now, in terms of the next page, page 3, you're recommending to us this two-track system, and I certainly can understand why you've taken the time to detail that for us. We can only make amendments to the notified plan that are within the scope of submissions.
That's right.
So I've been looking at your original submission to see if this suggestion is set out in any kind of detail, and there I don't think it is. I can only see one reference in the original submission that might be kind of hinting at it, and that's the one that you've linked to page 24. So when you're going through and hand annotating that submission for us, if you can find anywhere in your original submission where the detail of this proposal is set out, that would be helpful.
Can I add that probably over the 4 or 5 years, we're all sitting here as farmers or wanting to engage, trying to rack our brains on ways to not mitigate the plan, but ways to enhance how we can all make this work better.
Yeah.
And it's probably only been in the last 3 or 4 weeks that I've really been able to nut it together. For my mind, you've probably had some other submissions that are probably based on it, but I haven't.
Yeah, I just want you to understand, though, I don't want to give you any kind of false hope.
No, I understand.
We're what's called a semi-judicial body. We have to operate within the law, and we can only make changes that were raised in original submissions.
I understand that, but I also urge that the council... whilst I understand that there is a spirit that we can, that the council should look at the spirit of the plan as well, and how it's intended and how it operates. It can still operate as a plan, and I don't dispute that it shouldn't, especially under the RMA, it needs to discharge its duties.
Yeah.
But there is a spirit that of the plan that could be looked at too, and that's, I think, something the council would like to you guys to pass on to the council.
Yeah, I understand that, and as you're aware, there's three of the commissioners are also councillors, so I'm sure they're making notes of these and other issues that have been raised by submitters. So thank you very much for taking the time that you had.
Thank you, appreciate it.
Mount Linton Station.